Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.
Danny Meringue.
Dusty Bun.
Dusty Hera.
I've been really busy trying to save the world from Russians and monsters.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader.
Of course you have.
1080.
I want to hear it.
The Fan.
Hour number two, Danny and Dusty with you on this Friday afternoon. Thanks for being a part of our day, letting us be a part of yours. 1080 AM, 99.5 HD2, the Odyssey app, twitch.tv/1080AM, the Fan, and the party people on the YouTube stream, youtube.com/1080AM, the Fan. Party on, party people. Just so you know, sales end on Sunday. As your local Toyota dealers present the 11th Annual Fan Golf Classic out at Langdon Farms Golf Club. It's brought to you also by Henderson & Daughter, Windows & Doors, and Philbrook Law, Accident & Injury Lawyers. Time is running out. Sales close on Sunday. There are only a handful of morning rounds still available. Afternoon is sold out for Tuesday, June 24th. Victorico's going to have breakfast burritos before you tee off. Matt's Barbecue going to have you set after the round. Toyota's sponsoring a hole-in-one challenge on the 13th hole. We got tastings around the course from various vendors. Always a good time. Registration ends on Sunday, so head to 1080thefan.com, click on the Fan Golf Classic logo, and sign your team up. I was looking down the tee sheets. My neighbor is signed up. He is a foursome out there. He's going to be rocking around in that morning round. So he has told me that he will be dressed up in Seahawk gear.
Okay.
So if you see a guy decked out in Hawks gear, that's my neighbor. Mm. Be nice to him.
There you go.
His name's Moyne. Great dude.
All right.
Love him. All right. Draft is coming up the day after the Fan Golf Classic. The very next day.
Gonna be 48 hours.
So with the Blazers holding the 11th pick, we were just talking about the Lakers and their sale. That is a big deal because that adds an element of unknown to a team that we know is going to be aggressive to fill out a roster around Luka and LeBron.
Particularly at one position. It's at the center spot, and here's the thing. The Lakers have called everyone about everyone. They have. If there is a big man that is remotely gettable in the league, they have made a phone call.
I am pro don't do business with the Lakers. Mm-hmm. But just saying.
If you can extort, and that's what's happened. Everybody, like the single worst position you can be in as an organization is having a need that everyone knows that you have to fill.
I wonder if that's the trick that Danny Ainge uses. Is that what Danny does? Is he's just like, hey, you don't want to do the, I'm not the Lakers, man. Do business with me. So he got Boston rolling. He's fleecing people in Utah.
The funny thing is, you can talk about it now. When the Blazers traded Dame, I mentioned that. Yes, the Clippers and Celtics were after Drew. The team that also that I mentioned in there was the Utah Jazz. Utah Jazz were hoping that they could peel off Drew Holiday. They weren't willing to give up one of their young prospects in order to get it done. They were interested. I'll just put it that way. But their hope was they could have Drew, they could have Lowry, they could have Walker, and that in the next 6 months to a year, took a little longer than that, but they could peel off Luka. Their great white whale was Luka.
Oh.
That's what Danny Ainge was chasing for literally 3 years. He was trying to set it up so that they could make a move for Luka. And then, unbeknownst to him, because everybody forgets, the Jazz were the facilitator of the Luka deal as far as depositing money. And like he had no idea until basically 5 minutes before. When he was notified of what the whole trade was, because he was kept in the dark.
He should have been like, no.
He knew he was facilitating something.
Yeah. Didn't know it was the Luka deal.
But he thought it was like something a lot more minor than Luca. And when they found out, it was too late. And it's like, oof.
Too late. Still had 5 minutes to say, no, we call take backs.
Yeah, no. It's already been agreed upon. You can't do that in the league type of deal. So,
God,
but,
sucks.
Yeah, no, you just look around the league. And right now, the Lakers are in a position where everybody knows how vulnerable they are. They know that LeBron's got a year, maybe two, tops, before he calls it quits. And this team is transitioning towards a Luka Doncic-centered team. And the center being a part of that is a just a chasm of a hole for that roster.
Side note, very weird to see LeBron retirement ads all over the NBA finals. Like, he's doing press conferences about retiring. It's like, you're not. My wife looked at me last night and goes, did LeBron retire? I'm like, no.
No, there's just too much attention not being paid to him. Like, there's literally a story just the other day about how his kids want him to keep going as long as he wants to keep going.
Cool. Great. Awesome. Already knew that. Mm-hmm. What does this mean for the Blazers at 11, though? Because I've seen that the Lakers have been as aggressive as trying to get up to fifth, which would be Utah, which would be weird. But
it's going to cost a lot.
It's going to cost them a ton. But when you have LeBron and Luka, you're going, all right, what's it going to cost us to get that big that we need those two to work off of?
And that would be Walker Kessler. And they have tried to get Walker Kessler numerous times. The Jazz are not trading Walker Kessler for anything less than two good firsts. Two good firsts. I'm solid. No protections, no nothing. And probably a good player.
No protections and looking down the line and saying,
those are valuable picks.
How far out are we? Can we push this thing out? Because Luka and Walker Kessler will have a lot of tread on the tires. And that if you send him there, that would make them relevant throughout the entirety of their
quickly.
Deals.
And Walker Kessler is a lob threat and a great defensive anchor. Like, those are the kind of bigs that Luka can just thrive with.
All right. Well, I hope they're not.
Yeah, no. I don't.
I hope
Danny would require somebody's firstborn kid for that deal to take place, for Walker to go to the Lakers. He would extort every pound of flesh.
Well, his kid is now front office member, so, you know. You posted this poll on Wednesday. Who do you want in the NBA draft pertaining to the Portland Trailblazers? Not individually, people drafting them to own them. Kasparis Jakachionis, from Illinois. Was he like 6'8"?
No. Yeager
6'8", 6'6".
Kasparis, I believe, came in at 6'5", barefoot, if I remember
okay.
right.
Okay, 6'6".
But he's a solid, like, I've seen him. He's a big, strong kid.
Okay. Carter Bryant, wing out of Arizona.
6'7", wing, plus wingspan, hell of an athlete.
Cedric Coward, Washington State by way of Willamette.
And Eastern
Washington.
And almost Duke.
Well, go Bearcats.
Well-traveled, yeah, go Bearcats. And then other, coming in dead last was Cedric Coward, 14.6%.
Which is a bit surprising to me, because I've seen a lot of Blazer fans that are very excited about the idea of Cedric Coward, which is why I put him on the poll.
Was third at 16.7% of the pollies. There's a lot of people that said Cooper Flagg in the other, no. Deal chiming in with the anyone taller than 6'6". All right. We can have that.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone on that list is.
Noah Asenge came in on that. Derek Queen. And then Ty just said, pick package to trade Ant and or Grant. So Anthony Simons or Jeremy Grant.
The Blazers aren't using a pick to get off anyone.
Yegor Demon coming in the other category. So Rashear Fleming, he came in on like the first wave of workouts.
He was in, he was in the second wave, but he was in the first like real good group.
Okay. Those are your sampling of the others. But coming in second was Carter Bryant at 33.8 in a close vote. A couple of votes swinging this one. Kasparis Jakachionis coming in at first, 34.9% of the pollies.
Which I found a bit surprising, because I think more people out here will probably be a little bit more familiar with Carter Bryant, even though he is coming off the bench. But maybe there's some Duck fans in there that are scarred by when Illinois came to town and beat them by 40.
Shot lights out. I think that would be a reason why you would want him.
Yeah, I mean, well, what's funny is Kasparis didn't even have that great of a game. It's just everybody else was. He had a good game, but everybody else was lights out in that game.
Now, this is the question, though. Rip City can never agree on who they want in a draft.
Honk once for Greg, twice for KD.
Yeah, this has been the longest story in Blazers franchise history. Mm-hmm. The fan base always is all over the place. But it also seems like organizationally they're kind of in the same spot because of the way that this draft is built. The depth between six, and you've said this several times, 6 and 14 is a logjam, but that extends out from 6 to like 21, yeah. 22, 23.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that can go. Like,
there's so much variety, and a lot of the guys don't fit the bill of what Portland actually needs.
No, it's a very interesting draft when you're talking about the viability of potential and positional fit for the Blazers. Like, the guys who have more potential here aren't necessarily guys I think the Blazers are looking at. There's a lot of, not a lot, but there's a fair amount of bigs in this draft, and the Blazers really aren't looking at bigs right now. They have three centers on their roster that are all not only viable, they're good. Like, that's, they just have a ton of depth there. And you look at every position on the team has a young guy or two at every position as far as positional depth is concerned. Now, they're at the point now where they're probably going to turn over a couple of players, and I would imagine they're probably going to trade a player or two. But with that, they're probably more comfortable now taking on a younger guy. Now, if a transaction pops up that is somewhat Denny adjacent in the sense of like, hey, here's a young guy who we think has like even more potential untapped and we can really get into that, I could see them doing that. I think looking at where they are right now, just based on intel and discussions around the league, I'd say it's a better than a coin toss chance that the Blazers use the pick. But I think there's a real possibility that they either trade out and back and get more draft capital, or trade the pick for another player that's Denny Light. So it's very
trade. All right, I would like that, as long as there's somebody coming to Portland that's got the,
you know, how my bop, how my bounce, how my pop.
Mellow.
There you go. The Bobby Marks floated one earlier for ESPN that involved the Lakers in their pursuit of a center and the Brooklyn Nets. The Blazers would end up getting Dalton Knecht and a 2027 top four protected
pick. Don't do that to
Knicks.
Our fan base.
I put it out there already.
This is exactly what our fan base is like.
The Lakers would end up
Dalton Knecht again. We're doing this two drafts in a row.
I think the Blazers were totally fine with Dalton Knecht, but I saw some folks who were like, oh no, Dalton Knecht's going to be the guy and going into that draft. I'm like, no, he's not. It's going to be one of the bigs. It's probably going to be Klingon. I don't know why everybody's going down this path, but here we go. But the Blazers would get connected in a 2027 first from that's top four protected from the Knicks. That doesn't have a ton of value. The Knicks are probably going to be pretty good for the next couple of years. The Lakers would end up with the Nets number 8 pick and number 36. And then the Nets would end up with the Blazers number 11 and the Lakers 2031 unprotected pick.
No.
Moving back three spots gets you a 2031 unprotected. I'm like, yeah, I don't know about that, dog. And the Blazers definitely feel like they get the shortest end of the stick here.
Yeah, well, this is the most national trade proposal of all time.
How do we get the Lakers a center? Because this would all...
How do the Lakers get a center?
Because it's Colin Mollowatch.
Which team can we just sit there and be the throw-in? Oh, yeah, Portland. Yeah, sure, that one. Look, with everything you laid out, the depth of young guys on this roster across the board, are you going to get somebody that is going to earn immediate playing time at 11?
No.
Trade it. That's how I feel. I mean, if that right there is how you can go down this.
Unless a dude comes to camp like two, because that's what ended up happening. Tumani came out in camp and was just an absolute banshee.
Sure. But they also, they wanted him in that deal too.
They knew there was something there, but they also had the benefit of,
even though he's a second round pick, I get it.
But they saw him at Summer League and they were like, oh yeah, there's a little bit more there. And that was where a lot of that came from.
But if you don't identify that guy, then trade it and get somebody that can be that person that you say, no, we wedge them in, they're better.
I did the exercise of like, let's set the bar at 14 points per game. And then age under 25 in the NBA last year, just to show guys that scored at least 14, not like high level guys that like very Denny reminiscent. Everyone on that list, with the exception of like three guys, is untouchable. And like, you just look at that and go, is a team going to take the number 12 pick and insert whatever salary here for that guy? And as I did the exercise, there was, I think, two or three guys that you could squint and maybe say yes, But outside of that, I just don't think that's the case.
They also got players that they can deal to.
And that's what you wonder. Like, how much risk are the Blazers willing to put into that? Are they willing to trade a Scoot? Are they willing to trade a Shaden? Are they willing to trade a young guy who they think has some upside?
Swing, baby. Swing. So, all right. I saw something that just made me say, this career is going to be one of the more interesting ones to follow ever. In he plays in the NFL, but just to follow this story arc from start to finish is going to be fascinating footnote in history. Danny Dusty on The Fan.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
We got a dumper update here. We got a dumper update. Well, Cal Raleigh went yacht again.
And not the Odyssey dumper.
No.
Two bombs on the day.
Yeah, it's a double dump.
Yeah.
Yep. No upper deckers, though, because they're at Wrigley. So that thing just went right over the
single flusher.
Left field wall there.
Right in the bowl.
Right in there. And now Cal Raleigh has set the Major League Baseball record. And this is, I love this about baseball. For most home runs by a catcher, first qualifier, before the All-Star break, second qualifier, in MLB history.
Passed up Johnny Bench.
That seems good.
If you're passing Johnny Bench on any catcher type things, you're doing good.
That seems good.
By the way, still 22 games to go before the break after today.
Also. This puts him tied with Griffey, right? If he hit two dingers, I think that's how far back he was. I think with Griffey, as far as the most in Mariners history before the All-Star break. This is 29 now?
Yeah,
29.
He's got 29.
I believe that's the same that Griffey has.
Dings on the year. That's good.
I mean, if you're putting yourself in Seattle lore with Griffey, you're also doing very good.
Yeah.
I mean, 29 knocks before the All-Star break? For anyone, that's good. For a freaking catcher?
Well,
Holy crap.
I just call it the Dan Wilson bump. You know, you got the former catcher of the Mariners. I mean, he's getting all the tips.
Mm.
You know, Cal Raleigh, of course the catcher's going to be a good hitter now.
Right.
Because it's his skipper, old catcher. But big dumper alert right there. Good on you. Baseball is actually pretty fun. I was looking these up. I always get into the, when these things pop up on my feed, I love looking at them. There was a guy who put together, what was it, Jacob Wilson, you know who that is?
Mm-mm.
He's an A's rookie.
Okay.
And Ryan Spader, ace of Spader, who actually led the charge on Edgar getting into the Hall of Fame. Like, he was like, Edgar Martinez deserves to be in the Hall of Fame and would, like, tweet every single day about how Edgar should be in the Hall of Fame. This is through 99 career games played. Jacob Wilson of the A's. He's 23 years old and 81 days. He is hitting 332. His slash is 332, 377, 461.
Oof.
Yeah. In 405 plate appearances, he has 124 hits and 29 strikeouts.
That's an anomaly in today's baseball game.
Spader goes, that's pretty good. Let's look at Tony Gwynn.
Oh, dude, these numbers are crazy.
At 23 years and 99 days old, so only, what is that, 18 days older than Jacob Wilson. Tony Gwynn, through 99 career games, hit 293. His slash rate was 293, 338, 371. In 376 plate appearances, he had 101 hits and 27 strikeouts. So what Jacob Wilson is doing for the A's,
it's mirroring young Tony Gwynn,
is very, very similar. And if you take Gwynn's first 405 plate appearances, because that's where Wilson's at, he was at 291, 333, 374 with 109 hits and 31 strikeouts. So through 405 plate appearances, Wilson is striking out less than Tony Gwynn,
which is the gold standard,
with more hits and a higher average.
And the A's don't deserve to have nice things.
No, they don't.
But we love it for Jacob Wilson.
I do.
Great for him.
Yeah.
Go do it for literally any other team. Well, not the Rockies, the Reds, the Rays or the Marlins.
Yeah. And they just got done being up on the Astros in a series. Mm. And Cam Smith, their rookie, who is outfielder, he started brutal. He was hitting through his first 30 games, he was hitting 214. Last 29, he's hitting 317.
Baseball's so weird.
There's a lot of young rookies that are getting really damn good. Mm-hmm. Young players, not just rookies, young players.
A lot of top prospects are getting called up right about now, too, over the last couple of weeks.
That's really fun. I do have a quick story, though. In this career, it is going to be fascinating for me to follow because I don't know if there has been a more unheralded, under the radar number one overall pick than Cam Ward.
Mm.
Think of it. Like, we're talking about Shedeur Sanders, who's the fourth string quarterback in Cleveland. Yet nobody's talking about the number one overall pick mm-hmm. in Cam Ward, who's in Tennessee. I get it.
Which what happens at Tennessee.
But in any sport, nobody is like, because what we do with number one picks, we either overhype them or Anthony Bennett them and go, what the hell is this mm-hmm. pick? Like, the only guy that I can think of that is just like a number one overall pick was when Andrea Bargnani was picked number one overall.
That's the closest one.
And everybody was like, yeah, we get it. Mm-hmm. He was good, but I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, sure. And then everybody talked about all the guys that were drafted after him.
And then Chuck Swirsky gave him Rookie of the Year vote and stopped Brandon Roy from beginning unanimous.
Yeah. This is the most Cam Ward thing of all time, though. Even his six-part docuseries that is going to follow him mm-hmm. through the like his life up to being drafted, even this is the most Cam Ward thing ever. It's on Tubi.
Oh, God.
It's called Zero Star, The Cam Ward Story.
I've never heard. This is the first time I'm hearing of it.
Yeah. It's going to be on Tubi. It's Netflix? Nah. Prime? Nah. Like, both NFL partner streaming services, they're
that's
like,
so
nah,
crazy.
This isn't even getting Max treatment. The number one overall pick as a docuseries on
HBO Max now. We're coming back because they were dumb.
Well, because everybody's like, Max is dumb. HBO. Just call it HBO. But even this, like, the smallest details, everything is getting overlooked for Cam Ward. And that's why I am fascinated to follow his career, because at every single turn, whether it was zero star prospect mm-hmm. out of high school going to Incarnate Word, then following his offensive coordinator up to Washington State, and then going from Washington State to the University of Miami. It was like every single turn this guy has exceeded the expectations, mm-hmm. and now he's the number one pick that nobody's even caring about. And he was rightfully the number one overall pick. Like, they needed a quarterback. He was mm-hmm. the best quarterback in this draft, and people just don't want to talk about him because he doesn't give you that ammo.
Which is kind of crazy, because if you've ever seen any interviews with him, he's interesting and fun and thoughtful, and like, it doesn't add up.
This should be how we follow Cam Ward, is just like thinking of where this started, and it makes me want to pull for him even more. Mm-hmm. Like, I am a Cam Ward fan. I think he has his flaws in the NFL that may get exposed because he is a little bit too much of a gunslinger at times mm-hmm. and he got away with it in college. But can you get away with some of the wild throws, and whether it's off platform or risky, that stuff done fly in the NFL? I hope he is successful in Tennessee, because the story of people just not caring about Cam Ward, people are going to have to care.
Yeah. It's fun.
It is.
I like it.
It is.
All right. Coming up next, time for our worst day on the web. And we documented one hiker who did the 24 miles, 24 beers, and 24 cheeseburgers.
Hell yeah, brother.
I think I found one that might be worse. Okay. A physical challenge that is becoming a rite of passage. And if you were to do this, how much money would it take you to actually even consider? We'll get to that next year. But first, it's Big Kahuna with Sports Center Update.
That's that Hawaiian burger joint.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
It's time for today's worst day on the web. with Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
Man, that sucks!
We talked about this certain type of person that does this extreme kind of event a couple weeks ago. The thru-hikers that hike the Continental Divide and the California Pass. And there's also the Appalachian Trail. I could not remember the third one when we were talking about this. It was the Appalachian Trail is the other one. And these things are literally thousands of miles long. And there are people that take months at a time and walk these things. I have a family friend that has done, I think, all three of them now. And I think of him as a crazy person. He's a very normal, well-adjusted dude, but like it's a lot of people like liken it to a kind of a spiritual experience, because walking thousands of miles is just something most people on the planet never do.
Yeah, I have two cousins that both did it separately. They did the Pacific Crest Trail, and that was bananas.
It's nuts. Like, there's like grizzly bears and cougars and weather and altitude, and like, the way you have to pack, it's literally done down to the single gram, because you're carrying all this stuff.
Yeah, it makes sense for both of my cousins, though, because one is now a whitewater rafting and ski
guide,
and the other is a pilot.
Oh, one of these guys is the manager at REI.
Yeah, so. See? Yeah, it fits. Yeah, like, there's certain type of person. I'm like, never.
Yeah, it's so...
Never would I ever want to.
Yeah, the idea intrigues me of, like, sure, if, you know, I went down that, like, anytime you think of, like, you know, seeing every of the world's wonders, like, sure, that'd be cool.
Coolest part to me was, like, they would link up with just randos, and I was like, well, you know, one might be a serial killer, but at the same time, paired up with some pretty cool people that you end up walking with for a few days. And it's just like a few days, and then they're like gone.
Because everybody has their own paces and like stops that they'll make. And you get cool little trail names. That's the thing, is you get trail names when you do these, like call signs.
That's weird.
It is, but it just kind of comes with it.
Hey, and Sprout.
There's one here.
How you doing?
That is become like the unofficial halfway point of the Appalachian Trail.
Okay.
After 1,100 miles. And the thing is, these people, they'll stop off in a town to refill their rations or their water or their supplies, whatever it is, take a day or two to actually get inside, you know, a real building and kind of recharge before you kind of go back on it. Now, there's some people that don't do that. They just go all the way through and they're absolute psychopaths.
That's weird.
But for those that do the Appalachian Trail, a rite of passage has been stopping by this ice cream parlor and eating an entire half gallon of ice cream.
Nope. Okay, continue here.
So, like, some people say it's like this rite of passage, and it's fun, and it's this cool thing that you do. Other people are like, yeah, I stopped off in the town, ate the half gallon of ice cream, and then walked another 7 miles, and I wanted to die.
Well, yeah, the bathroom that they must have. Oh. Does an ice cream place have like a pay station bathroom that is right down the road? Like, you think about that, that would be. I think you could put that like 2 miles down the trail, and you just have a little plot of land where it's like, yeah, you want to use this nice bathroom? It's going to be $1.
Because it's going to make that money blown up. Because you think about this, like the stuff that people are packing, this is going to get a little graphic. You're eating stuff that backs you up a little bit.
Well, no, having that much dairy is going to make anybody's
But I'm saying, like, when you're on the trail,
bubble.
You're eating stuff that's like dehydrated foods that you kind of rehydrate, or stuff that you're not going to, you know, upset the tummy, as it were. It's very dry. It's very bland. It's just your nutrients. That's what you get. And now you're introducing probably 2,500 calories worth of lactose into your body halfway through a 2,300 mile trek. I would much rather do the 24 miles, 24 burgers, 24 beers.
Yeah, that would have been
the half gallon of ice cream.
I would like to do both, but the more feasible one is the burgers one, because it's also the sitting down to eat the ice cream, and then that's just a lot of ice cream in general.
Even like if you're going to be a full glutton, that's a lot.
That's a lot of ice cream, man. That's a half gallon of ice cream.
But I'm wondering.
Then go and walk another 20 miles.
Rust, is it? Is it, though? It's in one container, so it's one serving.
Look, if anybody on this show is going to go full glutton. Yeah.
Remember how many J's are smoked on that trail right before that ice cream spot. It's like, hey, we're a ways out. Let's get the appetite up.
Right? I mean, it's just...
I cringe to think what that would do to my bubble guts. That would send me to another dimension, man. That is a lot of dairy coming at you all at once. And, like, I'm not lactose intolerant by any means, but we've all been there where you eat too much ice cream and you're like, brrr. What do you get for doing this?
It's just a thing that you do.
Pride.
So you just eat it, like you pay for it, you eat it, and then you go and S your brains out?
It's like...
after good old Barry Horowitz.
It's like when we were younger and we would take road trips, if you'd never been there before, you'd stop at the first In-N-Out Burger in Reading.
But do you get your picture on the wall?
I didn't see any picture on the wall. Stuff.
Like, do you get... because, like, the eating challenges... I applaud the people that are saying, you know what?
Oh, no, the ones that do finish it do get a photo posted on the bulletin board.
All right, now this all makes sense. If it's for a picture on the wall, go ahead and do it, my man.
Yeah, there's a notebook to record all of the people that have attempted it, and then there have been, so far this year, 50 through hikers have finished the challenge, earning the honor of having their photos posted on a store bulletin board.
See, right there, and they only stay there for the year? I think you should have like a whole wall full of them. You know,
this is a quote from the trail name is Seagull. I feel bad. And it was very fun for the first 15 minutes. Now I and everybody I'm doing it with wants to die.
Well, yeah.
The record.
You signed up for this.
What do you think the record is for consuming a half gallon of ice cream as far as time? This is insane to me.
8 minutes and 30 seconds.
Cut it in half.
4 minutes.
Four minutes.
Dude, was that guy's trail name Iron Gut?
Set 2 years ago, but the trail name the Squirt. That's what happened after.
Yep.
A half gallon for, how are you not getting brain freeze at all?
That's 100% where I was at.
How about this? My wife knows somebody who does not get brain freezes.
Doesn't have the equipment for it?
Has never gotten a brain freeze.
They got to figure out what part of the DNA that comes from and
isolate that gene.
Yeah.
So you can have
replicate the hell
so you
out
can
of
have
that.
A half gallon of ice cream without the brain freeze.
Yes.
That seems wild to me. Imagine that you cannot get a brain freeze.
Imagine it's like, you know, what is it? Red dye number three or yellow dye number five. What was the old Mountain Dew thing that used to.
Yeah, yellow dye number five.
Five, yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine if there's something you could put in ice cream that took brain freeze out of it.
Wait, what did yellow dye number five do? Because I was always told, like, drink too much of that Mountain Dew, or you'll go sterile. And I was like 12, being like, yeah, you don't want that.
See,
on
our side of things, it would make it smaller.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Shrinkage.
Yeah. All right.
I was in the pool. Yeah.
That's what it did. See, I never knew what to make of yellow dye number five.
But I think they actually did, like, yellow dye number five did have something in it that did do something.
And sure, probably.
If I remember right, is no longer a part of the recipe.
Okay, well.
They found some other chemical compound to make it worthwhile.
Yeah, perfect.
But imagine if you could introduce ice cream onto the market that didn't give you brain freeze.
Yeah.
It'd be a game changer. Patent that.
That's called a Nobel Prize right there.
It's called Nesquik chocolate and strawberry milk.
Mm.
That's all it is, just melted down ice cream. That stuff is thick.
Yeah.
Love it. But it's like chocolate milk.
If you could keep the consistency, though.
Of it being cold?
Cold and creamy and icy and delicious, but you didn't get the brain freeze.
Yeah.
That would be a monumental.
I'm a slow eater anyway, so it's never been
a
problem
for
me.
You are a slow eater.
Never been a problem for me.
Have you ever done any, like, speed eating challenges?
Yeah, that's why I can't eat pickles.
No, that's right.
It was a jar of pickles and drink the juice in 2 minutes, and I puked up relish. Never had a pickle since.
How far did you get down that thing?
The whole thing.
Oh, you did get the whole thing.
Whole thing. Yeah, whole thing. I never used to have a pickle problem. Now I can't taste, smell, any of it. It'll make me want to throw up.
We're going to need that one,
violently.
Jeff. We're going to need that one. That's a keeper.
Yeah, never had a pickle problem. We're good. We're good. Now I have a huge pickle problem.
So here's the interesting thing. There's been a sizable change. Two decades ago, the record for the challenge was 9 minutes.
Okay.
So man has evolved.
I don't think man has evolved. He's just Squirt is a mutant. All right? Like, that's the thing. is that I don't think that is, we have an outlier here, and you know, we need to find where Squirt is now. Maybe he's going to be hiking his way over to, was it Coney Island for the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Challenge coming up here on the 4th of July. That is not man evolving. That is, there was one weird outlier who just rolled off the trail and has an iron gut.
It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of crazy, let's dive into the world of college football, because the world of college football and the litigation that's coming out of it, you teased this a little bit ago. What's going on between Wisconsin and Miami is going to appear before a court. And the ruling that comes out of this is going to be yet another one that will set the landscape for college football up for the next probable decade plus. We'll get to that next year on Danny and Dusty, 10 in the Fan. Well, a problem that has arisen in college football is the pilfering, not the pickling, of players from rosters. And Wisconsin and Miami, both universities, are going to head to the courts to decide a particular case where Wisconsin had a player under contract with an NIL deal, a two-year NIL deal, along with some other things that kind of went along with that. But Wisconsin is alleging that the University of Miami met with this player at their home, at this player's home in Florida, and said, "Hey, a direct representative of Miami and a highly touted Miami alumnus met with this player at his home and said, hey, if you come to Miami, we'll give you this amount of money." And they're calling it tampering.
Now, remember, this is how all these things usually get worked out in the tampering world, is that somebody not affiliated with the university, a collective not affiliated with the university, and not the person that like runs it, somebody reaches out to a family member, floats like, "Hey, remember Diego Pavia?" Mm-hmm. Right? He said, "Well, nobody contacted me, but people were contacting my brothers or parents and saying, what about $4 or $4.5 million? Would you be interested in entering the portal at that point?" And that's how usually these things happen. This is an added layer of what tampering is, because it appears, and what Wisconsin is alleging is really direct, that the University of Miami just went, "Yeah, we got somebody within the program and an alum saying, yeah, come to Miami. We're going to come to your house. We're going to talk to you directly. Come to Miami." That's not how it works, especially since Xavier Lucas is the young man in question. He's a defensive back. He's from South Florida. He went to Wisconsin as a freshman last year. He signed a two-year agreement with Wisconsin, and it was a revenue-sharing agreement. This is different than most of the tampering that gets thrown out there, because these two-year agreements now are part of the revenue share, where it's directly correlated to the university. Mm-hmm. And they're saying that Miami knew we signed him to this deal because they probably talked to him about it in that meeting at his home. And then they said they knew we had this agreement signed, sealed, and delivered. So Wisconsin never allowed Lucas to enter the portal, mm-hmm. because the portal had been closed. And so they said, "We got this two-year agreement, which is binding, not to the player himself, but to his name, image, and likeness being promoted by any other university." So this is where it gets sticky, and this is where like the whole legalese gets thrown in here. These universities are saying they're not employees of ours, mm-hmm. but if they leave, they can go, and this is what Lucas did. He just said, "Screw it, I'm just going to enroll at Miami." And he did for mm-hmm. the spring term. They're not employed, so we can't make them stay. But we do have a binding agreement, not to the person, because they're not our employer, remember. Mm-hmm. Not employees. But to their name, image, and likeness in any promotional activities. So basically they're saying, like, Lucas can go and he can play there, but he can't sign an agreement for name, image, and likeness at Miami as part of their revenue share. He can do NIL deals outside of the University of Miami. Mm-hmm. But what they're saying is, where Miami broke the law is they knew we had a legal contract with him, or his name, image, and likeness, not him, because not employee, remember. They knew we had that legal contract, and they violated it intentionally. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be the sticking point, because everything that the House settlement has lined up for is to stop the revolving door of transfers. And those two-year agreements are for your NIL, not you personally, mm-hmm. but to make it so you can have multi-year deals so you don't leave. And they tested it.
So the interesting thing here is, in a weird roundabout way, this is also going to challenge the transfer portal. Because when this first happened, that's kind of what this was looked at as. The transfer portal exists, but it doesn't really exist.
It opens and closes, and the only thing that opens and closes is the contact that people can have in there.
And is that quote-unquote legal? And that's another thing that will probably be challenged in a roundabout way here, because the transfer portal itself, because they're not employees, because they're not this, because those transfer portals do not line up with contract language or anything along those lines, does the transfer portal technically exist?
And no, it doesn't.
It doesn't. And that's an interesting door that's going
to
be opened.
Here's the precedent that they want to set. And this is why we're seeing the lawsuit. Because the CSC, which is the newly formed organization that will oversee sports in the power conferences, they don't have power to do this yet. The NCAA doesn't. And look, the CSC, they want these lawsuits to happen, so it sets a precedent. Mm-hmm. And so what's weird about this is Wisconsin is saying, we're not suing Xavier Lucas. We will not sue Xavier Lucas. Mm-hmm. We are suing the University of Miami. Because we just need a precedent set that moving forward, what is going to happen is these two-year agreements, three-year agreements, which guys are going to sign out of high school, mm-hmm. they are going to be binding to the university. Now, the high-end prospects, they're probably only going to sign one-year deals mm-hmm. because they've got leverage. They can do that. And you get on campus, nobody's going to be like, if you have the leverage is going to be you go year to year. And at that point, if the school's willing to do it, all right, they want your talents that much, mm-hmm. you're going to sign a year to year. For most athletes, though, it will be, we're going to try to lock you into three-year deals to where you cannot leave and they will be binding. And if that happens, then we see the CSE go, all right, we'll give you one freebie then to transfer, but the precedent's going to be set. You have to honor the contracts for your NIL.
Which I have a real suspicion won't hold up, because they'll look at that in the same face, unless somehow they become employees.
But if you are signing that contract, what you're signing to and what they're alleging Lucas signed to was his name, image, and likeness cannot be marketed by another university. Mm-hmm. So that means like he can't be on it. They can't sell his jersey at Miami. Mm-hmm. They can't put his picture on any promotional activities. You know, they can't do anything promoting Xavier Lucas. Because that's Wisconsin's.
And that's the thing is, it's going to be very interesting to see how that stands up. Because
are we going to see trades? Is that how trades are going to happen? Is that we're going to trade
rights?
Like we will pay you a portion of the guy's NIL mm-hmm. that we sell.
Clause.
We sell Xavier Lucas's jersey, and whatever we make on it, you get half. Is that what I like? That's a legitimate question.
Yeah, no.
I don't know how these things are going to happen.
I think that's going to be. Not a sticking point, but a part of this, but the same thing can be said of a coach who signs a contract and it has a buyout clause. I think it's going to be relatively similar. I think you'll have some sort of buyout clause if anything comes out of this. So, all right, coming up next, we don't do a ton of baseball, but the Los Angeles Dodgers are at the center of everything in baseball over the last couple of days. We'll dive into that next here in hour number three on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.